Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 22 of Could It Be Podcast. Today we're sharing Kerry's story. Now, Kerry joins us from the US and she's a massive advocate for BII over there in the US. She has shared her testimony at the FDA hearings, which I'll pop a link to in the show notes as it's available on YouTube. But she jumped at the opportunity to be able to share her story to bring awareness to breast implant illness. So I'm really appreciative of her taking time out of her afternoon to share her story with us. So please be kind to yourself when listening to this. And if it does trigger any kind of mental health symptoms for you, please reach out to the appropriate resources. I'll pop some in the show notes as well. Here's Kerry's story. Hello and welcome to Could It Be Podcast. Today I am joined by the very lovely Kerry. Welcome to the show, Kerry.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're joining us from today.
I live in Fresno, California, and I have two kids and a husband, and at the moment I'm just a stay-at-home mom kind of doing food delivery on the side. But normally I am a bartender, and I stopped when I got sick from BII. And I'm also writing a book about my journey with BII, so hopefully to become a published author soon.
Oh, amazing. Make sure you share that with us when you do publish that book, and I'll make sure all of the listeners hear about it.
Of course.
What was your initial reason for getting breast implants?
I've always been really thin, and I just never really developed a breast of my own. As I was growing up, you know, I got like the comments about, you know, having a small chest, and, you know, friends making little remarks that guys wouldn't look at me because I don't have breasts, or people making remarks like, am I anorexic because I was so thin and, you know, didn't have womanly curves. So that, you know, eats away at you and makes you think like you're not good enough or you're not a real woman. And as I got older and into actual relationships, my exes would cheat on me a lot, and it always made me feel like my body wasn't good enough because I couldn't keep someone from not cheating on me. My kid's dad, who I'm not with anymore, he used to cheat on me a lot, and always looking at other girls, watched a lot of porn, and it just really made me feel
inadequate.
Yeah. So I decided around, I think I was 24. My first child was about 2 years old, I think, at the time. And after I had him, it was almost like I got even smaller. Because I went through like a really bad postpartum depression, and like I couldn't really eat a lot. And so it was almost like I got thinner. And being 5'5 and 90 to 95 pounds is not, you know, it makes you feel like you're just like a child's body almost. And then, like I said, my chest got like kind of smaller. So at that point, I decided that implants were, you know, I had done a lot of research, supposedly, that they were brought back on the market and they were safer now. And the new gummy bear implants were supposedly not able to rupture or spill or leak anything into your body. And so I went ahead and chose to get those breast implants. Really bad decision. Not the best decision, but, you know, for a while, it made me feel more, oh, look at me, like I'm a woman now. And, but you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, there's so many things that wouldn't have happened had I not gotten them and gotten sick. So I'm not upset about it.
Yeah. And we didn't necessarily know how sick they would make us when we had them. So that's one important thing to say here. Like, so many of us almost feel a bit of guilt over getting them, or there's regret, or, but
there's the awareness now, but I don't think there was the awareness back then.
Oh, so, no, not at all. Yeah, I had joined some groups to learn more about implants, but at the time there wasn't Facebook groups. It was like, it was in 2009. So the research I was doing was on internet forums where, you know, people would join and talk about getting the augmentation and this and that. And I had joined a specific forum and I thought I had done a lot of research and I had done a lot of Googling and nothing came up about, you know, them causing illness. And so they say, well, you should have done better research, but I researched these implants for months and months, and I joined forums and talked to people who had them, and there was nothing. There was no awareness of this back then.
Absolutely. What kind of size did you go from and to when it came to your implants?
I started out a double A, and I got 275 cc, so they weren't even very big. I'm small, so my plastic surgeon was like, I don't want to overstuff you or, you know, put too much in. It's not going to work with your body. And so we decided on 275, and I went up to, I think that put me up at around a B, like a 34B. But right after I got them, about, I don't know, 5-6 months later, I got pregnant with my daughter. So I ended up going up to a double D naturally with the implants and getting pregnant. And then I kind of dropped down to a D after I had her. And then I just kind of stuck between like a C and a D cup after that.
Yeah. It sounds like we had similar size, because I think mine were 295 cc from memory. So yeah, not massive. And a tiny, like, you know, the fact that you were small before going up to a B cup, like, you know, that probably would have not looked too, like, out there. You probably would have looked quite natural for anyone that had met you. Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot of people really noticed, or not a lot of people thought that I had breast implants. Like, they just looked like it kind of fit on my body. And then after I had my daughter, I gained some weight. I was finally able to stay over 100 pounds. I was sticking around, like, 115, so it didn't really look, you know, out of proportion to the rest of my body. It wasn't really noticeable.
Yeah. So how long after getting your implants do you think any kind of breast implant illness symptoms started to kick in?
It's kind of hard to say, because there's little things throughout the years that I always just kind of contributed to being a mom of two small kids and getting older, and my ex was not necessarily to put it bluntly, he was a narcissistic, abusive person. And I thought, like, you know, all the stress, and then we would break up, and I was living alone with the kids most of the time. And regardless if he was there or not, I lived alone for most of the time. So it was me, two small kids, working two jobs. Like, I just thought these little things of, like, fatigue or stomach troubles or, you know, a little bit of hair loss here and there, it kind of made me think that it was a part of getting older, not, and stress, not anything to do with anything else. And I think I didn't really start noticing anything until about, I think it was 8 years after I got them. I started getting really fatigued, where I was having a lot of problems, like just getting out of bed and doing normal things. And I ended up taking my son to Disneyland, just the two of us, and I live about 4 hours away from Disneyland. So we did just one whole day trip thing where we drove down there, we went, and then we came back. But there was a whole lot of traffic, and it ended up taking us like 24 hours just to, it was like a 7 hour drive back instead of four. And I was awake for about 24 hours. And after that trip, I felt like I never really recovered. Like, I rested, but then I couldn't get back to normal for some reason. And I couldn't figure out why. And I started having like little joint pains and muscle things. And one day it just randomly clicked in my head. I don't know how or why, but it just clicked in my head to look up symptoms of silicone poisoning. And I looked online and there, you know, there wasn't a whole lot, but there was like regular, like, silicone poisoning, not necessarily to do with implants, but like symptoms of silicone poisoning in general. It kind of sounded like the things I was going through. So I ended up messaging a friend of mine, because I had like a group of friends from that forum when I first got them, who all got them around the same time as me. So I ended up messaging one of them and I was like, hey, have you ever heard of having issues from silicone poisoning? And she goes, I haven't really had any problems, but you might want to ask one of our other friends, whose name is also Carrie. And she's like, you might want to ask Carrie, because I think she might be having some problems. And so I ended up talking to her and she just told me like all of the breast implant illness symptoms that she had and all of the problems that you could potentially have and like the autoimmune and all of the, she just unloaded like all of this stuff on me. And all of a sudden I just felt completely overwhelmed. Like, what does this mean? Like, do I have to take them out? Because at this point I'm completely attached to them. And I feel like they're almost like a security blanket. Like I hid all of my insecurities behind them. And I started freaking out. Like, does this mean I have to take them out? What does this mean? Like, I don't know what to do. And she said she was getting them out and she already had an explant surgeon. And that, you know, she wasn't, I guess she had already been doing research on this for a couple months or whatever at this point. So she was already coming to terms with it and just ready to get them out. But I just did not want to accept, you know, that I had to get them out. And at this point I wasn't necessarily that sick where, you know, I felt like it was a necessity. And she added me to the big group on Facebook and I started reading all these stories and I was like, well, I'm not like this. I'm not this sick. Like, I don't think it's necessary for me to do this right now. And I ended up going back to my original surgeon and she was like, oh no, there's nothing wrong. They're fine. You've only had them for 8 years. It's fine. Everything's fine. And I asked one of the nurses, one of the MAs in her office, I was like, have you ever heard of breast implant illness? And they were like, no, we've never heard of that. And at that point, my ego was like, cool, you know, like, I don't have to do anything. Everything's fine. Like, I'm not in this gigantic hurry to really do anything at that point. So I left them in for, it must have been another 6 months or so. And another 6 months until I realized they had to come out, actually.
Okay, yeah.
So about 6 months later, I ended up getting really sick. I caught the flu and bronchitis and I got food poisoning, the flu and bronchitis all within the same month. So I was sick for about a month.
Yeah.
And at this point, that's when it clicked in my head that my immune system could no longer handle anything. It was just anything, any little sickness was going to be overwhelming my body. And my body couldn't do it anymore. Because my kids both got sick too, and they were fine after a couple of days. And I was sick for, you know, extended amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it finally occurred to me that they had to go. And I ended up messaging my dad because I wasn't at a point where I could afford to get an explant surgery. You know, I had just quit my job because I was starting to get worse. And then I had to move in. This was before I was with me and my husband were married. This was when we moved in together because I couldn't afford my apartment anymore. So I moved in with him. And so I didn't have the means to pay for explant myself. And he was helping to help me with everything. And he currently still is working on his degree, and we're still working at a restaurant. So he's coaching high school varsity football. So he's doing like 50 million things and we're barely staying afloat already. So I messaged my dad and I told him what was going on, and I told him what was making me sick and why I was so sick for so long, because he was starting to get worried. And he just automatically said, schedule your surgery and get him out. I'll pay for it.
Oh,
and I was like,
amazing.
So like this huge weight lifted off my shoulders. So I was able to get a consultation with Dr. Chen in Newport Beach, California. Excellent explant surgeon, microsurgeon. All he does is explant. He's a big advocate for BII. Like, I was so lucky to be able to go somewhere where I had the peace of mind that the surgery was going to be done correctly, and someone who was going to, you know, not try to make me feel like I was crazy, because we all have been there where doctors make us feel like we're crazy.
Definitely. Yep.
And so I scheduled my consultation, and it took, because he's so in demand, you know, it took a couple, like 2 months before I could have my consultation. And then after that, I scheduled my explant surgery, and that took another 6 months before I was going to be able to have my surgery. In that 6 months, I dramatically declined, like dramatically. Everything just fell apart. Like my health from that moment where I first found out about BII, and like everything was fine. I was looking at the groups and thinking, well, I'm not one of these ladies that's bedridden. No, like I became one of those ladies that was bedridden. And I think about a lot, like if I had just did it when I first found out about it, I probably could have avoided all of these things that ended up happening. But I feel like it needed to happen, because otherwise I would have never came to this place of realizing and finding like my self-love and like my self-worth, and you know. And so in those 6 months, I developed hypothyroidism, high cholesterol, autoimmune disease, which they think it's either lupus or Sjogren's. Still don't have an official diagnosis, and I explanted almost 4 years ago, but the blood work is like lupus or Sjogren's. About 50 or so odd symptoms, severe anxiety, severe depression, paranoia, panic and anxiety attacks. I ended up having really bad issues with my throat. That is one of the things that I still struggle with, is like a tight feeling, and like that.
It's like when there's something stuck in your throat,
yeah,
kind of feeling.
Like yeah. Always trying clearing my throat. Like right now, I feel like I need to clear my throat.
Go for it.
And it's like, that's one of the last things that I still struggle with, is that throat issue. And that's why I think it could be Sjogren's, because of like the whole thick mucus situation. My anxiety was just so bad, and the paranoia that like you're just dying, like you think you're dying, like you feel like your organs are all just slowly shutting down, and you're dying. Like there's no other way to put it. You feel like you're gonna die.
Yeah.
And so I started writing letters to my children. Like I started writing out things to my husband. Like, if I die, please like watch my kids. Don't, you know, abandon them, please, because they're not his kids. They're his stepkids. And I was writing out all these things, and my quality of life was dramatically declining so fast that if it was going to stay like that, I didn't want to live anymore. There was no way I felt like I could have kept surviving if I wasn't going to get better, if it was just going to stay that way. Because the mental the way that it messes with your mentality, like your brain, like your mental health, and, you know, the chemicals and everything that are in the implants that go up and mess the heavy metals that mess with your brain and the inflammation. And, you know, inflammation doesn't stop at your neck. It goes, you know, it keeps going. Like, you get inflammation in your brain. And I used to say that it felt like my brain was too big for my skull, because it felt like my brain was just pressing against my skull. And it just makes you crazy. It makes you literally feel like you're going insane. And my paranoia was getting so bad, I thought that all of the moles on my body were melanoma. I just could not get this irrational fear that every mole on my body was melanoma, that I went into a panic attack and I ended up digging a mole out of my arm with tweezers. Like,
oh my goodness.
I was literally not all there. I was going insane. And I was contemplating how I could commit suicide. I was Googling things I could overdose on. I would take a shower and go into a panic attack and think about slitting my wrists with the razors. Like, my husband started telling me that I couldn't take a shower unless he was home, because mm-hmm. he would come home from work and find me like in a ball in the shower, losing my mind. And I've done research and found that women with implants have a higher risk of suicide. And it makes sense to me, because, you know, I literally felt like that, like I wanted to die. Mm. And I always say that my daughter saved me, because there was one day where I went into a panic attack and I was laying on the bed and my husband was at work. And I was Googling, like, what can I overdose on? Because I was really, like, on the verge. I was about to do it. And she came walking in, and at the time, I think she was about 7 years old. And she came walking in, and she didn't say anything, and she just laid on me and hugged me. And at that point, I realized I can't be selfish. Like, I can't leave. Like, I have to be here for my daughter. And it's the only thing probably that stopped me from actually going through with something. So when I finally explanted on September 26, 2018, I woke up and my husband took me back to the Airbnb. And all of a sudden, it was just, I don't think I had felt that peaceful in over a year, 2 years. Like, it was like some magical, I don't even know how to explain it. It was like magic. Like, I was sitting in the Airbnb in the bed, you know, and I just came out of surgery, and I'm just sitting there, and it just felt like everything was just different. Like, it was peaceful. It didn't even matter what symptoms were still there or what wasn't there. My brain just felt calm. Mm-hmm. And that alone was a huge difference. Had that been the only thing that got better, I would be perfectly happy with that. But that paranoia never came back.
So it was pretty instant, like, back. Straight after the surgery that you were feeling this, like, that's how quickly your body started to heal from it. Like, how amazing is that?
Right? And
yeah.
While I do have, you know, I've gone through a lot of detoxing and, you know, symptoms coming, going, and, you know, getting frustrated because things come back, or the fact that the anxiety never came back was big enough for me to be happy that I did get them out. But thankfully, you know, the first 2 years were the hardest. I spent a lot of the first 2 years having to figure out, like, what actual damage the implants caused. They, you know, like candida, food intolerances, things like that. And getting rid of the candida was really difficult, because doctors aren't necessarily taught how, I guess, to deal with stuff like that. They act like that it's not possible unless you have AIDS or, you know, a really bad immunodeficiency, like cancer, you're going through chemo or something. And I kept telling my doctor that I think I have candida and she wouldn't do anything. But of course, she also told me before my explant surgery that I just needed to see a psychiatrist. So, I mean, I didn't really trust her. Yeah. And so I didn't really trust her. And I started trying to figure out ways to, excuse me, kind of work on it on my own, which was difficult because I didn't really understand at the time that you have to work on killing like the biofilm first and then, you know, the candida can die off because it's in the biofilm or behind the biofilm and you have to do multiple things. It's not just going to, you're not able to just take an antifungal and it's going to go away. That's not how it works. And it was about 2 years before I finally felt like I was free of it. And it was so bad. It was in my spit and you could see it. And I did, there's a specific test you can do at home. If anybody's listening, you know, wants to do a candida test at home, you can just spit in a bottle or in a glass with water. And if it looks like there's legs coming out of the spit, like almost like a jellyfish look to it, like a white, that's candida. And mine was so thick and so bad. And I even showed that to my doctor. I took a picture of it and I showed it to her and she still wouldn't do anything. So that alone took 2 years. And candida on its own can cause a lot of symptoms. So, you know, clearing it and getting rid of those symptoms is very difficult. I also figured out food intolerances were a big thing. My symptoms kept coming back because I kept eating things I didn't know I was intolerant to.
So what sort of things were they that you couldn't eat?
So I learned that people who have autoimmune or autoimmune problems should stay away from what's called nightshade vegetables. So like tomatoes, potatoes, bell peppers, certain seasonings like paprika, cayenne pepper, all of these things can make inflammation worse, which will make your symptoms come back. And I had no idea, you know, I love tomatoes and I love bell peppers and things. And I thought I was eating like healthy, like healthy. These are good for me. Yeah. But no, they were causing my symptoms to continue to come back every time. And a lot of the times it was the throat symptoms, like my throat would swell up, my face would swell up. I always had a lot of facial inflammation all throughout, like this area in my jaw, under here in my neck. And anytime I ate those things, I would swell up. And right. I finally figured that out and cut them out, and a lot of inflammation stopped. But then I found out that foods high in histamine were also causing my symptoms to come back. So other healthy things that I thought I was eating, like lemon, citrus fruits, you know, certain other fruits and things that have a lot of histamine or they cause histamine to be released in the body. And those things I also had to cut out. So here I am having to cut out a lot of my favorite foods and I'm stuck down to this like little amount of things that I could eat. Like for fruits, I eat a lot of like blueberries, apples, things that aren't like blackberries. And it just dropped my diet down to this tiny little amount of foods I could eat. Yeah. And, but eating and sticking to those things made a lot of symptoms go away. And, I realized that I really needed to work on healing my gut because the implants really messed up my gut. A lot of my IBS symptoms are gone. I don't really have like stomach pain and those stomach cramps, you know, anymore. And so I think I've made a lot of progress there. It's just really hard because a lot of these things ladies don't realize. They go into explant and they think, oh, I explanted, I should be good. like everything should be fine now. And I tell everybody that in my groups that I run, I'm like, explant is not a miracle cure. It's the first step in a healing journey. You know, you have to get out the toxins that are left over in your body. You have to figure out everything that the implants did to you and then work on healing those things specifically. You have to actively change your lifestyle because your body is already overloaded with toxins. So if you're living a toxic lifestyle, you're not going to heal. And I see it all the time where people are constantly saying, you know, like, I explanted 3 months ago and my symptoms are back. And, well, you know, you kind of have to be proactive with it, you know?
Yeah. I'm so glad that you share that message, because the amount of maybe influencers, I don't know, people who have a big following will be like, oh, I've explanted and I feel amazing the next day, everything's gone. And I'm sure that does happen for some people, but for so many of us, I'd say it's the majority, it is a long-term thing. Like I've heard somewhere that they say for every year that you had implants, expect a month of healing for each year. So I had my implants for 16 years. And I'm picturing that maybe in 16 months time, I'll feel at my peak. Like, I'm definitely feeling a lot better, but it wasn't like, there were a few things that improved or disappeared straight away. For me, it was like the weird body odor. I woke up, that was gone. Like, that was the first instant thing that disappeared. But, you know, you do have your waves where, your pain comes back, and like, you know, some people call them flare ups or detox waves, and, you know, they're real things. They happen to us. And the more people I speak to, the more people I find out that happens to them as well. So yeah, thank you for sharing that message, because it is so, so important.
It's definitely important. And people, I feel like ladies need to go into explant with a realistic healing expectation, you know, and that even that people saying, if, you know, you had them this many years, it takes this many months. Well, I had mine for 9 years and I explanted almost over 4 years ago, and I'm still not completely healed. Like, I would say I'm about 85%, you know, maybe roughly around there. But I've also been actively working on my health. So even actively working on your health and taking that approach and knowing, and I still am not, you know, 100%. It's some people, it's just a long, long road. And like I said, the first 2 years were the hardest. Those first 2 years I was having intense detox waves, like every couple of months, and they wouldn't last for, I've heard some people say, oh, I've had a detox wave, it lasted a couple days. Mine would last like months, like
wow.
1 or 2 months I was feeling terrible. And then I would feel great for a couple of months. And then I would feel terrible for a couple of months. And I could always tell I was detoxing because I would break out in like these weird bumps and stuff. And it was always very similar. Like the first symptom, like similar symptoms would start first and then kind of progress throughout the wave. And then it would stop. And then a couple months later, it would start again. And that went on for like about 2 years. And around the third year, it kind of calmed down. But I still had a lot of like throat issues. And I still struggled with the tightness and, you know, some swelling. And even when I wasn't eating things I wasn't supposed to, I would still randomly kind of swell up. And I ended up at three years, a little after my 3 year anniversary, my thyroid swelled back up and I ended up getting a nodule on the side. And I couldn't figure out like, why is my thyroid swelling up? Because even though I was hypothyroid with the implants, 4 months after explant, my thyroid levels dropped and went back to normal. So I thought, okay, my thyroid's fine. But around the 3 year mark, my thyroid swelled back up and I went to the doctor. Actually, first I went to the ER because my doctor was booked. So I went to the ER and they didn't really want to do anything. They were like, well, you know, your thyroid levels are fine. And I'm like, but it's obviously swollen. Like, I can barely breathe. It's pushing on my trachea. Like, you could obviously see my neck was like big. And they didn't really want to do anything. And I pressed them. I was like, can you test me for, like, test my ANA and everything and see what's going on? Because then at that point, I'm thinking maybe it's like an autoimmune reaction. Like, it's swelled up because of my autoimmune or whatever. So he didn't even want to do that. I had to press on him to do that. And so when I ended up getting the ANA test results back, my ANA was positive, and I had a lot of other, he did a whole panel of ANA things, and there was a lot of positive ones and things here and there. And I was like, okay, so maybe it's an autoimmune reaction. My doctor was still booked up for a long time, so I ended up doing a lot of research online of how to get your thyroid to shrink down. And I found that CBD oil is actually very healing for the thyroid. I read this article about this lady who her doctor suggested she have her thyroid removed, and she didn't want to do that. So a friend talked to her about CBD oil. She ended up healing her own thyroid with CBD oil and not needing her thyroid removed. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try this. And I could feel there was something like pressing over here, and I ended up finding out it was a nodule. And like my whole thyroid felt large and like swollen over here. So I ended up getting some CBD oil, and I took it orally twice a day. And then I also rubbed it on my thyroid twice a day. After about, I don't know, it must have been a month to 2 months, my thyroid shrunk. And at that point my doctor's appointment was still a little bit off. Like, my doctor gets scheduled out, and it takes months to get in to see her. And so I kept doing the CBD oil, and then I ran out, and I didn't have the money to go buy more at the time. And then after, it started kind of swelling up again. So I asked my husband to get me some more CBD oil, because I was like, look, like, this is, I'm struggling again, help me. So he got me some more. And I've been on it since, and it has not, like, it shrunk down. And I've ended up getting a, ultrasound on my thyroid about 6 months after the initial ER visit. And my thyroid was normal size, and they said there was a nodule, but it was so tiny, there was nothing they were going to do about it. So CBD oil was able to shrink my thyroid and shrink the nodule. And also I've noticed that a very good side effect is that it also helps a lot of inflammation. Like, my face has not swollen back up anymore since I've been on the CBD oil. Even if I accidentally eat something that I shouldn't eat, it's not swelling. And I suggest this to a lot of ladies in the groups that, you know, you may want to think about getting on CBD oil, because it's actually very healing for people with autoimmune and like thyroid problems. And it's been like a game changer for me. And since I started that about, that was a year and a month ago, my symptoms have been dramatically like less, even with having, you know, still having like an autoimmune type issue, my symptoms are dramatically less. So if anybody wants to try that, I highly suggest trying CBD oil. It's very beneficial.
Cool, thank you. What sort of symptoms would you say that you're left with now out of all of them? It's probably easier to ask that than what improved by the sound of how many there were.
I would say just a lot of issues with my throat is probably I still clear my throat a lot. I have some sinus issues, but I don't know if that's related, because it didn't start until about a year ago. So I'm not entirely sure if that has anything to do with autoimmune, or if it's just I'm allergic to something around my house. We do have like a few things that make me think that there could be something in the house that I'm allergic to. Like, so we had some issues with our air conditioner and stuff like that. So I'm not sure if that's part of it. I do get some fatigue on and off. nothing super crazy. Still get brain fog every once in a while, but not like, it's not that bad. There's not really a whole lot that I can say or, you know, on a daily basis. I can be pretty normal for the most part. I just say 85% because I do know I still have that autoimmune and the throat problems here and just a little bit of brain fog and fatigue. I'm also almost 40, so I don't know if like the muscles and the joint thing, like my joints, but it's not like it was when I had the implants. Like when I had the implants, I had like severe hip pain and like severe knee pain. And it's not like that. It's more like normal, like I'm getting older type joint pain.
Pains. Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't know that you're nearly 40 looking at you. Like I would have thought you were younger than me. So that's one thing that the explant has done for you. It's aged you backwards.
Oh, girl. Yes, I had really, really bad with implants. I had really, really, really bad, like, dry skin and, like, the lines in my forehead and, like, my skin almost looked like this grayish, yellowy color and my eyes were always red and, like, a yellowy, hazy. And, like, I have brown eyes, but with the implants, they almost look black. Like, okay. Yeah. It was really, like, this dead look. Like, and I always had, like, flaky skin and, like, giant circles under my eyes. And the funny thing is, like, I didn't notice that even before I had, like, before I knew I had symptoms, like, years and years before I knew about BII, I always would wonder why in pictures I looked kind of like this weird grayish washed out color next to my friends. And I never really put that together until after explant. Well, the implants were impacting my skin and my face and, you know, and I don't look like that anymore when I take pictures.
No, I've seen some photos that you've posted on your Instagram where your face is quite inflamed and you look like an absolutely, a completely different person. Like, it is just huge, the difference they've made. Like,
it's crazy how much they prematurely age you. Because I was always really young looking, like, everyone always thought I was younger than I am. And then all of a sudden, I got really sick and it looked like I aged like 10 years, and now all of a sudden it's like I aged backwards 10 years. And I notice it's funny that I can kind of tell when people have had implants for a long time because I can see that face on them and I can see, like, you know, the pain, even if they don't want to admit it yet, I can see it in their face. I can see, like, the dry skin, the gray, pale, weird looking skin. And I noticed too at the, like, towards the end before I explanted, I like to be out in the sun. You know, I live in California. I like to be out in the sun. You know, I like to lay by the pool and I like to, you know, tan. And I noticed towards the end that my skin wouldn't tan anymore. It was almost like it didn't matter how long I laid outside. And my mom is Mexican, so I'm half Mexican. So I tan really fast.
Yeah.
And I've always tanned really fast and get really dark. So towards the end, when I started realizing my skin would stay this like pale, this pale grayish looking color, and I wasn't tanning at all. And I had no idea, you know, and then I get them removed. And that first summer, all of a sudden, I'm super tan again. And it's crazy how it impacts your body so much. Yeah,
what was it doing to cause that? Like, that's just crazy.
It's got to be the chemicals is what I'm assuming.
For sure. So you, the way that we got in contact, you actually were listening to the podcast and you heard me talking about the fact that my cholesterol had dropped after explanting, and you had a really good explanation for that. Do you want to share that with us?
Yes. So before I had my explant, my cholesterol had shot up, and I don't eat very unhealthy. You know, after I started dating my husband and he started having like liver problems and stuff, like we would eat pretty healthy. And, but my cholesterol kept rising. It was getting close to, I think, about 240, and I couldn't figure out why. Well, after I explanted, I didn't do anything different because, one, I didn't know about the dietary changes and things I needed to do because of inflammation, but until 6 months later. But at 4 months, my cholesterol had just randomly dropped by itself, back down to normal. It was like under 190 or 180 or something. And I ended up doing a lot of research because I was like, okay, this has to be related in some way. So I was doing a lot of research and trying to figure it out. And it turns out that your cholesterol can rise as a way to try to protect your brain from heavy metals and toxins like going up to the brain. And so it made obvious sense to me that because implants are leaching these chemicals into our bodies and, you know, we're full of toxins, that our cholesterol could also rise. So even if it's not on the list of breast implant illness symptoms, I know there's a lot of lists circulating around of symptoms. Even if it's not on there, there are so many other things that can impact you. You know, you might, don't dismiss something just because it's not on one of those lists that it's not from your implants, because it definitely could be. They impact us on such a systemic level, like your whole entire body. Every system is being impacted by these chemicals. So don't necessarily dismiss something just because it's not on one of those lists.
For sure. Yeah, because I have joined a study, like a breast implant illness study here in Australia, and part of that is they wanted some blood test results. And normally you would jump onto the study before you explant, but I've explanted 7-8 months ago now, I think it is. So I just asked my doctor to provide the full bloods that I had done in September. So I explanted in June, I had some blood tests done in September, and I was looking at them, and I remember them saying, oh, there's HDL and LDL, and I don't actually remember which is which, but there's like a good one and a bad one.
Yeah.
My bad one was high, but my good one was always high as well, because I exercise a lot. Apparently that impacts that in a positive way, and but that brought the ratio down, but I still needed to get the bad one down to be considered healthy. And I don't know, like, you know, it might sort of be in a different kind of points system I guess across different countries, but mine was above 5.5 before explanting, and looking at the ratio now, it's 3.5.
oh wow. Like,
yeah, and for me, cholesterol is something that I do worry about. My dad passed away a couple of years ago from frontotemporal dementia, and, you know, you do your research on that kind of thing, and they do say if you've got high cholesterol when you're younger and you've got family who've had it, you're at a higher risk of going through that yourself. And that's a dementia that starts quite young. Dad was probably 50 or 60 when he started. So like, that's one positive step that my body's taken, obviously, now that the toxins are out, the implants are out, and I have, you know, one part of that I don't have to worry about necessarily when it comes to my future. Like, I don't want to put that on anyone else. I don't want anyone else to see me the way that my dad was. Like, he would have been mortified with how he declined with his illness, and like, I never want anyone to have to care for me in that kind of situation as well. So that was like a big weight off my shoulders once I saw that. Like, the doctor, when I had the appointment with her, she was like, oh yeah, it's like low now, and I'm like, oh cool. She didn't tell me the exact numbers, and then when I looked at them, I'm like, my god, that's like a healthy person. Like, I was really, really just so happy when I saw that, and thank you for sharing that information with me, because I would have had no explanation for it myself, just like, oh, my body's healthy now.
Yay.
So, yeah, thank you. On the topic of Instagram, you've obviously got an Instagram account, which, you know, we'll talk about like that and how people can, like, you know, follow on with your story and reach out to you at all. But I did notice that you do have a video in your Instagram which talks about what was part of a hearing with the FDA. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So in 2019, it was 6 months after I explanted, I went with a group of women to the breast implant safety hearings at the FDA in Washington, D.C. And a handful of us spoke, gave a testimony, which was really powerful, probably one of the best things I guess I could say I've ever done. I was doing a lot of advocacy work that year and before COVID, and that's probably the best thing I'm most proud of that I've done, because telling your story, I guess now it's not as hard to do because it's been, I don't know, four or five years. But back then, I was still stuck in my, like, PTSD from being so sick and what I went through. So it was really hard to be able to put my story into a speech and tell it to the FDA panel, who probably aren't exactly going to believe a lot of what we're saying, you know. And of course, there's the people there that are for implants and trying to give speeches on how great implants are, because, you know, it's both sides. And so I made sure to include in my speech that there, yes, of course, there's women that say that they're wonderful 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years after they had them, but where are those women going to be 10, 15, 20 years from now? And it's just, I don't think I'd ever been that nervous before. Standing up and telling your most vulnerable story while you're still traumatized from it, to a group of strangers and the entire internet, and just, it was really, really scary, but I'm really proud of myself for being able to get up and do something like that. And I'm really proud of everybody who went and told their story, and, you know, we made progress, because what we were asking for was, well, we were asking for textured implants to be banned, and we were asking for breast implants in general to have a black box warning, which means, for anybody who doesn't know, that they are the highest level of warning where they can cause serious harm or death. So we were asking for breast implants to have a black box warning. We were asking for surgeons to warn women before implanting, you know, give a checklist. This can happen. This can happen. These symptoms, breast implant illness, BIA-ALCL, the breast implant associated anaplastic large cell lymphoma. Of course, now there's we've discovered that there's more cancers that they can cause, the squamous cell carcinoma. And we ended up, you know, it took, I think, 2 years after that they finally did do the black box warning. So implants do carry the black box warning now. They do recommend that surgeons, I don't know how they're going to enforce it or if they do enforce it, but they do recommend that surgeons, you know, give a checklist and a warning to women before implanting. They did not ban textured implants. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, we just keep fighting. That's all we can do. But there was some successes that came out of it, and I'm glad now that, you know, there's actual information out there that women can look at, whether or not they want to actually see that, because I know a lot of the times when people implant, we're coming from our ego that, you know, just wants bigger breasts and for whatever reason, XYZ reason, or, you know, a lot of people implant because of their past trauma or conditioning from society. And, you know, when you have those blinders on, you're going to do what you're going to do.
Yeah. My life will be better when I have this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, but the information is there, as opposed to it wasn't being there, you know, whatever amount of years ago, 2009, when I implanted. I would have liked to have seen the information. So at least, you know, even if I did still decide to go through with it, I would have known when things started happening along the way, as opposed to chalking things up to being a single mom or two jobs and this and that. I could have started realizing, hey, my body is starting to have this issue because of my implants. So maybe I should start thinking about getting them out or, you know, whatever. So at least the information is there. People are aware. Would we like to see, you know, more? Obviously, we would, you know, like there to be harsher, more rules about it, but we're making progress slowly. I mean, you know, that's all you can really do when it comes to things like the FDA. They take so long to do things.
You're up against a big thing. Like it's David and Goliath.
So progress is progress, and I just want something that I've really taken out of this since explanting. After I explanted and I realized that I had like PTSD from the illness in general, I also started realizing that a lot of the trauma from my life started resurfacing. Things that I just shoved under the rug and, you know, I'm fine, everything's fine, you know, pretending it wasn't as bad as it was, whatever. Everything started resurfacing. And I had about 20 years of things that I just suppressed. So I'm in this place. This was probably about a year and a half after I explanted this started happening. I'm in this place where all of a sudden now I'm not just faced with healing my body. I'm faced with healing like my soul and my mind and everything. And I come to this really, I ended up going to this really dark depression, and it wasn't any depression that was brought on by BII. It was depression brought on by all everything just coming back to me and having to actually feel things that I just suppressed and hid behind my, basically behind my implants, behind you know, my insecurities, my conditioning, my trauma, like all these things that I just
being
pretended.
With a narcissist.
Exactly.
Like, that can do, I've been there. I can do so much damage, and that sticks to me for a very long time. Yeah.
And so I have spent the last 3 years or so really just working on me, like working on my body, yes, but working through all of the things that I just hid for so long, working through and finding who I am as a person, you know, behind all of the trauma, behind like the societal conditioning, behind just me at my core, at my soul. And it comes with a lot of unlearning all of the things that have been put into you that you just kind of accepted because people, you know, people make you feel certain ways about yourself and you start believing them, especially from like a narcissist. It's like that. And you just start having to unlearn all of these things. And through unlearning all of these things, you start loving yourself, like your actual self. Not just, oh, I love myself now because I have breasts, or no, like that love wasn't unconditional. That was a conditional love. You loved yourself, oh, because I had these nice breasts. No, now it's loving me for me, my natural body, and who I am as a person, as opposed to what I can provide people or what people see in me. And like, I don't need validation, like outside validation. Like, I validate myself now. I don't need to look a certain way to make other people happy. I don't need, and a lot of that even came with, I stopped wearing makeup. I stopped, like, I don't wear makeup anymore unless I'm going somewhere or doing this podcast.
I was going to say, like,
have a little bit amazing. On, but other than that, I don't wear it on a daily basis. And even when I do put it on, like, I don't put on face makeup. I just do, like, my eyelashes, my eyebrows. Like, I'm not sitting here like I used to, like, foundation and concealer. Yeah. And I don't feel like I need to please other people. Like, it's me pleasing myself, validating myself. I don't need other people's approval, you know? And that was a really, really long, hard process. Like, I went through like a deep depression, and I ended up taking, and I had always said I would never do this, especially even when I had BII and I was really depressed. Like, I always said I wouldn't do this, but I ended up taking an antidepressant for like a year, which was really hard to get off, and I swear I'll never do it again. But I felt like I needed it, because I felt like I couldn't, all of these emotions and all of these things were coming back so fast and so hard, and I just couldn't process it. I couldn't handle it. And taking the antidepressant just made me feel kind of numb to where I could just kind of sit with it and feel it and think about it and then let it go. And I learned that I could forgive people who hurt me, even if they didn't want to apologize or would never apologize, but I'm going to forgive them because I deserve my own peace. And then I'm going to forgive people who made me feel like I was never good enough because I deserve my own peace. You know, I don't need them to apologize. I just need to forgive them so I can let it go. And I ended up finding who I was at my soul. And that's more important than any implants or any, you know, what you think you need to make yourself feel better. That people just need to find their unconditional self-love and let go and heal all of that trauma. And then you'll realize you don't need things like breast implants. It's not, that's never going to fulfill or bring out what you really, truly need at your core.
For sure. There's one thing I said when I was on another podcast in Canada, and it was like, you know, it sounds like a bit sort of surface level, bit of a shallow comment, but you've got so much more to bring to the world than your boobs.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, I had this light bulb moment. I was at it was like a beer and barbecue festival here in Adelaide with a friend, and I was possibly feeling a little bit insecure about the way I looked. I'd put on a little bit of weight. I can't exactly remember what the situation was, but she pulled me aside and she was like, "Do you realize that whenever I am out with you, you make me feel like there's nobody else there but me?" Like, she was so worried about like how people judged her and perceived her and people looking at her. I'm going to get emotional saying it now, but like, you know, I didn't realize that I brought a lot of security to that friend, that she felt like nobody else there mattered. We were there to have fun. We were there to have like good conversations and enjoy ourselves. And like, we were both in tears, like, I mean, having this conversation. We'd had a few drinks too, like, add that into the mix, of course it's going to happen. But like, you know, I didn't realize that I was that for somebody, that I was, yeah, like someone's strength, I guess. And that's the stuff that's important. Like, you know, what you can bring to the world, what you can bring to somebody, like how you can help them. And, you know, obviously there's other things that you do in your life that do that, but that FDA hearing, being so vulnerable, being so fresh from explanting and having so much going on, yet you still did that to try and help people, like, that is amazing. That is what it's all about. So thank you for that. Like, you know, I can't even begin to imagine how difficult that may have been for you, but you did it. Amazing. Thank you. So if you could go back and give your younger self some advice, or, you know, in that time where the younger self was considering breast implants, what would you tell her now?
I am a firm believer that everything happens the way it's supposed to. Of course, I would want to tell her to love who she is and love her natural body. But I also believe that it's not necessarily easy to just love yourself. You know, it takes a lot of people, you know, we have to learn our life lessons and the things that we're here and meant to learn. I'm a very firm, a lot of people might not believe in this, but I'm a firm believer in reincarnation and soul evolution. So I would love to say that I would like her to love who she is before going through anything terrible. But at the same time, I feel like I was supposed to go through this so that I could learn these things, so that I could love myself the way I do now. Because I don't feel like, I feel like if I, she, if young me had loved herself the way that, you know, and maybe she loved herself enough to not get implants, but would she have loved herself to not go through like abuse? And, you know, I feel like getting the implants gave me this, getting the implants and going through BII gave me this understanding and this place of coming to such unconditional self-love and having such self-worth and self-respect. Because even if I loved myself not to get implants, who knows if I would have had the self-respect to not do these other things. But now I'm at this point where I've gone through all these things and I've learned all these lessons, and it's brought me to this place where I now know not to do, like, not put up with these certain things. And I love myself so much, and I would not let people treat me these ways anymore. And it's all thanks to the fact that I got sick and went through this. And I feel like I was meant to get sick and go through this so that I could learn these things. Because little tiny me, yeah, it's easy to say, love yourself. But at that age and at that time, you, what does that even mean, you know, to a
when
child?
When you don't know who you are as a person, yeah, like, necessarily in your early 20s, yeah.
What does that really mean? Like, I could say, oh, I love myself, but I didn't even know what actual love was at that time. So how am I supposed to know to love myself? And I feel like it's just, in so many ways, breast implant illness was horrible, and I wouldn't wish it on people on purpose. But in so many other ways, it was a gift, in that I would never have come to this place if I hadn't gone through this. I would never have learned so much about myself, and I would never have found my self-respect. And, you know, who knows if I would have never gone through this, would I still be in a narcissistic relationship? Mm-hmm. Would I still be letting people take advantage of me? Because I would just let people walk all over me. Like, I wasn't necessarily, you know, and I know a lot of it stems back to like childhood and stuff. You know, my parents divorced when I was 13 and my dad left, and my mom was stuck in her own trauma, and I was kind of just stuck to grow up on my own and kind of figure things out. And, you know, I know a lot of it stems from stuff like that too, but I never would have learned all of that. I never would have gone through and analyzed myself and my life and worked on healing those things and understand my, I wouldn't understand my behaviors, because I've kind of also come to this point where I realize a lot of my behavior is trauma responses, or like, you know, things that kind of gone down the line from when I was a kid to now, I never would have probably figured any of this out if I hadn't gotten sick and all of this stuff wouldn't have resurfaced. So I almost see it as a gift where I have so much more knowledge and so much more understanding of my life and so much more peace and so much more just overall love for myself that I probably wouldn't have had if I hadn't gotten sick. So I don't necessarily know if I would want to just say, I would tell me, love yourself.
Yeah.
Because even though that's what I would say, but to a little me, what does that even mean? You know, you don't know. Like, unless you, until you go through these experiences to be able to learn and gain this knowledge, just telling little me to love herself isn't feel like, I would want to tell her that, but I feel like she would be like, I don't know what that means. Like, I do love myself, you know, like.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
difficult. I appreciate the honest answer there. Like, no, I appreciate it because, you know, we need to hear both sides of what people would say. No one's ever asked me that. I wouldn't necessarily change what I went through because, like, I had a deformity. Like, and I no longer have that now. Like, I'm not perfect. I don't look perfect, but they didn't look perfect when they were in towards the end either. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily change what I went through either. And now I'm able to help other people, like, who, you know, might then make that decision not to get them in the first place, or might make this decision to explant by hearing our stories. So, no, I get you. Like, I absolutely get what you're saying there. Like, you know, I appreciate how honest your answer was.
It would also be, because I feel like I've also come to this place where, like, I've discovered also, like, my purpose, because I do a lot of, like, advocacy work, and I do a lot of, you know, I run some Facebook groups to help other ladies, and I've really kind of discovered that I want to help other people. Like, I want to help them through what I have gone through, whether it be VII or trauma or, you know, whatever it is, I enjoy helping people. And I feel like that's where, like, my book comes in. Like, I really want to get this done, even though it's taken me so long, because I am horrible. Like, I'll write something out and then I'll do, like, a couple chapters, and then I'll go back and be like, no, I don't like it, and, like, start over. And then I'll write a couple chapters, no, I don't like it, and start over. So I really need to, like, actually just let it be done before I start editing and doing weird things. But I get really weird with my writing like that. I've done that since I was younger. I was, like, really good with writing in high school, and I would always do, like, no, and then, like, reread. Terrible with that, but
yeah,
I'm trying to get it done is the thing. But I've really discovered that, like, my purpose is to help other people and help them get through these things. And, you know, I did the FDA, and I've done a lot of informational booths at, like, women's expos. Like, we'll set up booths and we'll have, like, the breast implant illness information. We'll have, like, leaflets and, like, pictures and stuff that they can look at. And I've had multiple people change their mind from getting implants at those booths. I've had people realize why they're sick at those booths. I've had women, like, take information because their mom or their sister or whoever is sick and they don't know about it. And I've done a couple of, like, local news things, and I've done where, I don't know if you know the TV show of The Doctors.
Yes, yeah, I have seen that. I think it's on during the day here.
Yeah, so we did a breast implant illness episode a couple years ago, and I helped the producer, like, get the organize, like, the women and, like, get everybody to go, and we sat on the stage and stuff. And,
wow.
Like, yeah. So I really want to just help people and, like, get the information out there, and I don't think I would have really figured out that I have that ability to help people if, you know, I hadn't gone through that. So there's so many things that I can take away from it that are, yeah, it was a negative experience, but it turned out into a positive outcome.
For sure. So where would our listeners be able to follow along with your story?
I have a Instagram page. It's at breast implant illness 226. And then I do have a Facebook group. It is a California Facebook group, but, you know, I accept people, you know, you don't have to live in California. Like, it's not a big deal. You can still learn about, you know, implants and stuff. And it's the California Breast Implant Illness Support by Carrie. And then I also help moderate another Facebook group for my friend Christina Roland, Breast Implant Illness Rejuvenation and Education with Christina. Okay. I moderate that one with her. So, and that's like anybody, it's not just state specific. It's a bigger group. So, and then I also have a lot of information on my actual Facebook page, just my personal Facebook page. And I always have my breast implant illness information open to the public. So if you want to follow me, you can follow me. And I post like all the updates, like the FDA stuff, like anything that has to do with this illness. So that's all open to the public.
Beautiful. I'll pop links to all of those groups and your Instagram and your Facebook into the show notes so that people can just click on and find you that way. Beautiful. Now, was there anything else that you wanted to sort of share or any other advice that you wanted to give to anyone that's listening to this episode?
If you think that you're feeling sick, if you think that, you know, you have symptoms or something just doesn't feel right and your doctor is dismissing you or telling you it's all in your head or that you need to see a psychiatrist, it's not all in your head. It's definitely real, and there are so many support groups out there that will help you through. Don't dismiss it. Don't just put it off to, you know, you're getting older. A lot of people do that. I see that all the time. You know, do the research. Get them out, man. Like, don't wait until you literally think you're dying.
There's many a life people on the other side of it.
Yeah. So many people are like, well, I'm not that sick, so it's fine. And I did the same thing. I totally understand it. But if you just do it when you start having minimal symptoms or whatever, you know, whatever small things, you're more likely to not have to go through as much illness, as much detoxing, as much healing afterwards. It's just so much easier.
Definitely.
And you're not crazy. And you're not alone.
No, absolutely. We're here for you.
Yes. Reach out to us. Reach out to me if you have any questions. I'm always talking to people. People are messaging me all the time. I have no problem answering questions if you have questions. You can message me on any of my platforms, whatever. I have absolutely no problem. I get messages constantly, so it's perfectly fine.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for everything that you've done and everything that you're doing when it comes to breast implant illness. And thank you so much for sharing your story and so much information with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the episode, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Carrie.
This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.